I thought we'd have a little moment now and discuss anyway, how was it for you? You know, what happened for you? We've got some pointers here. How was it to impart the different aspects of the liturgy? And I say that because you've probably noticed, put your hand up if you've noticed, the blessings that came through the different aspects of the liturgy were actually quite different each time. It wasn't the same blessing at all. They're all different kinds of blessings that have come. So does anybody want to comment about how it was, person A, the one doing it? Is there anything you want to share about how it was in you doing that?
Into tears because I could feel the weight of what's
actually
happening.
Yeah. Yeah, the weight of it is, it's very solemn and very sincere, very true and real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone else find that?
Yeah.
I've had a part experience or a little piece of an experience for the kind of dominion that we've been talking about. Skill is do this in faith and not Jesus, God honouring our word, isn't it?
Yes.
And the method of experiencing some of that dominion.
Yes.
As God's son.
Yes. And God's fully in it. You know, God's not asking you to be overly qualified. God's simply asking that you really understand the words that you are saying and the significance of them, according to Christ's salvation, and that you'll simply straightforward deliver it. And he will deliver the various things that have been proposed in it. He'll deliver the forgiveness of sins, he'll deliver the blessing, he'll deliver the peace, he'll deliver... Christ comes and delivers his communion with us. He just needs somebody to do it. So you could quite easily do this among family members or your children, or you could do it with friends, or you could do it with strangers. You could do it around the sick bed of a person who was in need of receiving the Holy Spirit and Christ in Holy Communion. So long as you had a little booklet of that where you had a format where they could read it and you could read it, you're now able to do that. Christ, you've seen Christ turns up, God shows up and does it, which is very nice.
Yes, you can.
You know, I do this. Yeah, you can.
It's very humbling.
It's incredibly everything, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's very humbling. And if you do this regularly, and William and I have had occasion to do this regularly with other people, and you do have to be mindful to come back into that humility. You don't just say it. I've been in some masses, for example, where the priest is not really present. And, you know, Christ still does his work, but you're hoping that the priest would be a bit more present than what he is. Mm. And so if you do this regularly, it's really valuable to come back to that humility and realize that it's Jesus. It's Jesus' moment. And therefore, you know, let him have space. Let him have what he needs. In order to do that.
Doing that, of course, is that when you're asking him to be there, is actually waiting to experience, and that takes you immediately into that space because you're actually experiencing coming. And you cannot be but humble in that.
Yeah, role. You're empty, as I said before, you're emptied of yourself.
It is being empty, but it is being so honored.
You're speaking his word, yes, and he's honouring it.
And he's honouring
it. You take that to your mum in Torino, or wherever she is, in Florence. Yeah. No, where is she?
She's in Milan.
In Milan, yeah. Yes, exactly that, you know.
I must admit, I think my experience in doing this here, I must probably had three or four more slightly distinctive experiences with the peace, which is really, I hadn't quite sensed that before, and also the a sense of conviction with the confession, which was something I really hadn't. And just a slight difference is in the sense of spiritual reality in those. I've had the sense of peace before, but not quite like that. I've had the sense of Jesus being in the elements, and so that was much the same. But then there was the aspect of a sense of conviction with the confession, and the sense of peace and release and the absolution as well. So there was several graduations of experience compared to what I'd had before.
And you've been doing this already for other people for a couple of years, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
So there's a lot of room in it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not just a rote dogma that you're kind of reciting. It's something that has life every single time. And normally this is accompanied by a sermon, and your sermon quite often is something that Christ inhabits very richly. So you know there is position in this. I have a booklet of this that we use, for example, and maybe I should email it out to you. And you see room for a sermon in there. Yeah, there's even room for a couple of songs if you want to sing. You can blow it out to a half an hour service, which is quite lovely. So how was it to receive Jesus into the bread and into the wine? You know, clearly it happens for you. It's very, very subtle, but it's deeply spiritual, isn't it? Yeah. How was it to discern whether or not God was moving at each event? You know, this is person B. You really do have to be present with it, don't you? And then you have to be sensitive to what's being said. You're totally there for every word that's being said. You're not there sort of, you know, chewing on a bag of peanuts and sort of biding your time until it's time to come up and have a drink and have some bread. You're there in a godly attendance for God to provide Christ the Son of God to you. And so it's very very attentive, and in the attentiveness, very very much discerning of what's going on.
And it makes discernment really easy.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
It takes
away. Yep.
Was it God or was it not God?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
makes it happen, makes it real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the blessing, you know, that Jesus is saying, I will put this blessing upon you. And so you're wanting that blessing, and that blessing elevates your discerning. It lets you see the thing spiritual. And if you don't have that, you know, this is the big thing that Steve's atheist friends and so on will always argue, that, well, it just sounds like words, and it just seems like this is just, you know, just ordinary and just material. And for them it is. But if you're discerning in the Spirit, the things of the Spirit, from that you're able to sow fruit of the Spirit. And the fruit of the Spirit then starts coming back into your life. And that keeps increasing your spiritual discernment in life. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to make you rich or give you favour with the Lord Mayor or anything like that in a material sense, but it could, because of who you have become. But it does give you God's spiritual world here on the earth in which you can live. And the other person doesn't have that. And therefore the other person doesn't enjoy that beatitude of God, the blessedness that comes from God. And these are, you know, the blessings of God. So that's the realness of what you're doing. You're partaking of Christ in spirit with He who is spirit, so that you who are spirit can sow seed in spirit and get spirit fruit. And if you don't do that, all you've got is a material world. And a material world is simply a conceptual world, and it's catch and kill, and it's really ugly. You know, it's meaningless. It's shallow and meaningless. And so the justification for all of this spirituality is that you get to live a spiritual life which has spiritual fruit in it, spiritual benefits. And those benefits are joy and peace and happiness. And you get real a sense of who you are. How did the training...
It's very difficult to do it with Catholic people, though.
Well, no, it depends who you're with. You know, I've done it with lots and lots of kids. I took Mary's mum to a Catholic mass on my birthday, on that day, and there were Catholics there. Well, it was lovely. You know, there was a real peace among everybody. There was a love coming out of it. There was some guy we never knew who just kept saying to us, "Oh, have a great day, won't you? Have a great." And you could just see the peace of the Lord on the guy. And he,
no, but you doing it.
They wouldn't take that from you, though, would they?
Who?
Those Catholics.
Wouldn't take what?
No,
wouldn't, no, because their organization is structured differently.
Yeah, so would it be like blasphemous for them if...
Well, they would be going against their organization's precinct, yes. So they would have to stay with their own priest. But this is contained within their thing. You know, this is not just us. You know, this is Christ's Holy Communion worldwide. So, but I just wanted to introduce you to the blessings that are in it, so that you can recognize the prayerfulness and the worshipfulness that is in it, so that you can act that out with other people in a prayerful and spiritual way that is actually calling upon your Father Fusion. You can act in the will of God with this perfectly. That's the reason for presenting it. Our priest will never show you that. You know, a local pastor will never do it like that. Local Pentecostal pastor will never get into this sort of stuff. You know, they just don't. I've never seen one ever do this. Not here, not anywhere in the world.
The first time that we did it, I went to my pastor at the time, and I told him, and I said it was so good, and he kept, because you gave us a booklet, not a booklet, but you gave us the whole liturgy.
Oh yeah,
the liturgy.
Yeah,
and he was really interested. He was a Baptist pastor.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I've actually run this to other priests. You know, I've run this to priests and pastors who have come to my meetings, and they've all been, you know, and they've even taken it away. And a couple of students in Finland, for example, ran it at a seminary, and the priests were really impressed. They said, "Gee, you know, I've never looked at it like that. I've never thought of these things like that," and so on. So it's just Jesus. It's not a cult thing, right?
And even to Catholic people, even if I can't, you know, I can't do it unless God really, really, you know, clearly tells me to do it myself, you know, like to be the priest. Even explaining them as we go through, you know, in a mass, as we go through what is happening, and the fact of receiving it and really, really seeing that it is happening, it's really good.
Yeah. So it's a very good thing to do with people who have already become familiarized with it. But for example, we've done it with a group of people over a couple of years, and they expect it. They don't expect anything less. They actually expect all of this. And very often, William has said, at the end of the meeting, no one wants to get up because the blessing of God is so rich there that they don't want to move. And it's because you're highlighting Christ's presence, and it's nothing emblematic about it at all. You want Christ in there. You know, we've done it to people who have died the following week, you know, so these people want Christ there. They want to connect like that. So it's a very real kind of a thing. So I think it's a good thing to do. And it took a couple of weeks in the beginning for me to lay the foundation for it. And I explained it to them. And once you've got a group of people who can believe like this, it doesn't take long before it's a really devotional thing. When Christ comes into the bread and the wine, you're kneeling around the table talking to him, you know, before you eat.
What's really, just if I share an experience from that, some of the participants, English was not their normal language, and some of them really did not speak English at all. So most of them did not understand the
actual liturgy.
Went through it, but they all understood getting Christ in the bread and in the wine. And, you know, the numbers would vary from 6 to 12. Like, maximum we ever had was 15. But every time, certainly in the last 12 months of it, the end of the service, hardly any of them would ever move. You know, they were just...
That includes an Orthodox from Ukraine, and I didn't speak a word of English about this, and an Italian woman who didn't speak any, and who was also deaf, and didn't speak any English on this. And so you get these people who I would type out the readings that we're doing, type them out in their language, which was very nice for them. But again, as William said, when it came to Christ, Christ made all the difference. Mm-hmm. And it was really beautiful. So just moving on. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. One more question.
Yeah.
In the some of the past episodes that we've done on Sundays, where you've been through like seeing features of God the Father and the Holy Spirit, we did a session on Jesus as well, which was mostly teaching, I think, about that.
Yeah.
We didn't really do the features of discerning His presence.
Yeah.
Would this be that?
This is very specifically Jesus. And so it is a good exercise for discerning, because you'll notice actually that we haven't really called on the Holy Spirit and we haven't really called on the Father at all. And so the presences of the blessings have come by Holy Spirit blessings without the presence of the Holy Spirit person. Just the blessings have come upon us. And the person of Jesus is the one we've called into the bread and into the juice.
I could definitely discern that.
Yeah.
That it was Jesus and
yeah.
the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Like you say, I haven't really sort of identified before.
Mm. Yeah.
And this is kind of, it's quite different in my mind, it's quite different to how I would have otherwise thought of trying to discern Jesus.
Yeah.
I would have tried to discern a person, you know, like a physical kind of human formish type person.
Yes, yeah. You know, I think it's probably possible to find somewhere a liturgy out of the traditional churches, or certainly to create one in which the identifiable Holy Spirit is present and the identifiable Son Christ is present and the identifiable Father is present, so as to be able to glean blessings and participate in communion with each of these deity parents. You know, it's possible to do that kind of a thing. You do that in a group of people who are totally convinced and believers in that. You wouldn't really lay it open to the public, but it's possible. So just off this, for those, just those who have given it at the moment, do you notice in what way this has empowered you? You know, we're talking here about Father Fusion, getting connected into God and so on. In what way has doing this empowered you? Got any thoughts on that? We're looking at this one down here.
Well, I've noticed the graduation in different... I've become conscious of different experiences of spiritual communion,
mm-hmm.
Which is something I really hadn't done before,
mm.
At a totally different level.
Mm. Mm.
The blessing, the conviction, the absolution, the presence of Christ.
Mm. And the departure of Christ for some is very unusual. You know, you don't see that done in churches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, you're left for Jesus to just pick up the slack and, go off himself. But I was very surprised when Jesus said, "This, I want you to do this at the end." I go, cool. And it does. I don't know how you feel, but I feel it kind of seals it up. And it's very clean. It's very clear.
Well there is a spiritual principle involved with that as well, of course. Which is, you might remember that experience at the Vatican that you had, where one of the priests observed somebody taking the bread and starting to walk away.
Yeah.
And they were very watchful of the person.
Yeah. I talked to one of the priests later and he said, we get so many people come in here who are witches and wizards and sorcerers who want to take the blessed bread so that they can then desecrate it.
Really?
Yeah. As a means of coming against Christianity in the world. And he said, so we insist, we like people to receive it straight into their mouth so that there is no mistake of them taking it away from here. Now, obviously, some person could put it in their mouth and just shut their mouth and walk away and then take it out and preserve it. But if it's put in your hand, very often people would carry it away. So anyway, we had a person in our pilgrimage party one year in Rome who did that, who just took it in her hands and then walked away wanting to come back to the pew and eat it, and was... quickly pursued by two priests who sort of stopped when they saw her coming back, and she stopped halfway and decided to actually eat it as she was walking back, and so they never quite caught up with her, but we were watching her.
I noticed that in the Word of Vatican in April last year.
Oh, yeah.
For Palm Sunday.
Uh-huh.
They would only put it directly into the mouth.
Yeah.
You know? I remember seeing myself on that occasion, someone having their hands and he would want to, he didn't take it and try and run away, and they would just wouldn't give it to him there.
Yeah.
I saw a priest arguing with a woman who didn't want to take it into her mouth. But wouldn't it just be enough to pray that whoever, you know, that if the sacrament is taken out of the church, Jesus leaves?
It's not a matter of that. It's what happens in the mindedness of the person who's doing the sorcery. If the person thinks that it's sacred, then the person will... You know, sorcery is only a low-level sort of a thing. All right, so let's...
Can I just ask a quick question? At the end of, communion churches and people break the cup, what is that representing?
I thought they only do that in a wedding. I don't think they do that in a Holy Communion.
I've seen people do it in church.
Only a Holy Communion, not related to a wedding or some other festive stuff. I don't know. It might be an Orthodox Eastern European practice. I've heard of it, but I've, as far as I can remember, I really only associate it if somebody's involved with a wedding or you know, a Jewish thing like that. Anybody else want to say anything of how it's empowered you?
I actually, at the beginning, had a visual of like a release of just water rushing through my body as though it was just being cleansed. And then there'd been something like I've been stewing on all day as to whether something I should do or not, and it was like that happened, and then I knew the answer, like from Steve reading whatever the passage was at the time. It was like, oh, I knew the answer.
Spoken to you.
There was no question of that.
Yeah, that's nice.
So that was cool.
Yeah. Then there are other questions, you know, what can you take away from this, and how does liturgy impact on your Father Fusion prayer and worship? These are things probably for your deeper contemplation outside of the time that we've got here, but it's worth considering that. All right, so let's change roles, and you'll probably run through this a lot more quickly now.